On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. Everybody, I'm here with Rob Reichert of the Miami Marlins organization. Rob, thanks for coming on, man. Really appreciate it. Tell the listeners about yourself and your journey through baseball, if you would.
Pretty well. I first started off in 2012 with the Miami Marlins organization with our high A team. I was placed in the position in June after a vacancy opened up. And then prior to that, I was with Tulane University for about 6 months, just doing an internship. And right prior to that, I was at the University of Louisiana Lafayette for about a year and a few months. 6 months of that was for my college internship. And then I stayed for an extra 6 months just to work under strength and conditioning coach at Texas Tech right now, Rusty Witt. I know a lot of people know him. He's the former Green Beret strength coach. A lot of guys really like his mentality and his tactical strength and conditioning sides of things. But in regards to the Marlins, I started off in 2012, high A, then went to GCL. Then I went back to high A in 14, excuse me. And then I went to AAA for 2 months because we had an employee who left for a little bit. So, and then I went to AA, and now I'm back in AA in 2017. So I've been a little bit all over the place, but I've been pretty fortunate being able to kind of dip my toes in the pool, so to speak, in a lot of different places.
Yeah, man, you've been all over.
Yeah.
It's all over. All right, let's get right into it, man. So you did the MLB Europe this offseason, and I know a little bit about it, not too much. I've heard kind of some guys that have gone through it, so I'm excited to do this one too and hear what you got to say. So let's start with, you know, how you got involved with that, maybe what your role was there, and we'll kind of roll from there.
Absolutely. So I had heard about the international program years prior to going this past offseason, but it was brought to my attention this offseason by my coordinator, Mark Brennan, and he said that they were interested in looking for individuals who want to apply for MLB Europe. Didn't really have any specificity. It just was looking for applicants. So my initial nature is, if there's an opportunity at hand, why not think or at least consider it, especially in regards to baseball and travel. And I've never been to Europe, really, so that sounded pretty cool. So there really wasn't much much more than a conversation my coordinator and I had. And then from there, I just simply applied to Jeff Kruschel, and he and I started going back and forth with just simple information like resume, cover letter, and then he said he'll get back in touch with me. So I said, well, in the back of my head, of course, I'm thinking, well, it can't hurt to apply, but in regards to actually getting the position, that was pretty amazing to be able to have that opportunity and to be one of the chosen people out of the applicants. So
yeah, man, that's awesome. That's kind of how I am, is just if there's an opportunity, just, you know, apply for it, and hey, you never know. So absolutely. It's good, man. That's important to just, you know, jump in sometimes, and anything that can help your career is important. So what was your role there? I believe you were in Germany, right?
Yes.
So what was your role out in Germany with those guys?
So I was in the southern portion of Germany called Bavaria. So not being, a German-born citizen, the Bavarians and the southern Germans, they really are extremely prideful. They're the ones who you see in the Lederhosen and who drink copious amounts of beer and sing and dance. So out of all the places in Germany, the Bayerisch or the Bavarians were very excited about their culture, and also to have me spend their winter with them. So my role with them, though, was real simple at first. It was just go over at and view and plan athletic sessions. So I sat down with their strength and conditioning coach, Stefan Mueller, and essentially he said we need to do some dynamic warm-ups, some movement series, something that can be teachable, dynamic, but also fun at the same time. So looking at it on paper, it was real simple, like, okay, we're just going to do 15 yards out, some karaoke, backpedal skips, things of that nature, just to kind of get the juice flowing, kind of get to just basic movement patterns. And then from there, we might take it on to some quadruped series like crawling, side crawling, and break it down into more quote-unquote functional movements. And with that being said, he was open to any of the athletic sessions, but he wanted to eventually then open it up to mobility and soft tissue modality, which we ended up doing later on the first 6 weeks I was there. So it was pretty open in regards to what he wanted, but he definitely wanted something in regards to proper movement, functional movement, and be able to do something outside of weightlifting.
Okay. And what age group was this that you were working with out there?
Yeah, so that was the next point I was going to say. On paper, it's real easy to put a lot of things down, but the age groups were 13 to 18. So essentially, I try to put it in the best point as if you're with a minor league or major league organization, you have a Dominican academy. So essentially, this was like a Dominican academy in regards to having young athletes there who have to be on one different programs or have different limitations or a language barrier is tough. So there was multiple things to consider outside of just a basic athletic session. So the oldest people there had 18 to 30 year olds, but that was their professional in-house German team that would train at the same facility, and I would work with them as well intermittently in between groups. So that was nice to be able to have some older athletes to be able to get ideas and work with as well. But for the main MLB Europe program, it was the academy, 13 to 18 year olds.
Okay. So I think I might know the answer to this next question, but what did you learn there that you kind of took back with you to the Marlins? I know you're in Double A, so it might be a little bit different because the age group's a little older. But maybe in terms of like spring training, working with younger guys there, is there anything that you learned in Germany that you brought back with you to the States that's been helpful for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in any situation, I mean, at least for myself, I'm going to try to get something from it. I went into the MLB Europe program, going into Germany, not as the American strength and conditioning coach who's all-knowing and omnipotent. I try to be as humble and try to like temper my action with a little bit of wisdom, and see what I can take from them, but also give back in return, just like a paying it forward back and forth. So the strength and conditioning philosophy that Stefan Mueller had, that was probably the most outstanding thing that I took away from him or took away from the trip. And it's not because it was anything mind-blowing, but it was just the way that he himself sold the information, taught the information, and displayed the information. He was very traditional in regards to doing a deadlift, but we're going to superset with a half-kneeling hip flexor stretch. And then we'll do a Turkish get-up, but then we'll superset that with some like band explosive movement. So some of the movements that he was doing in their warm-ups reopened the idea of new exercises to me that I haven't done in quite some time, like for instance a Turkish get-up. And he was doing it with 13 and 14 year olds, so that was really nice to be able to see young athletes doing a 35 or 45 pound kettlebell overhead for a Turkish get-up, whereas I know that I probably would have some athletes here on my Double A squad that would have a challenge for that movement. So so they were very, very skilled tacticians in their movement quality. Besides his programming, I was impressed with work ethic. I got a better sense of work ethic, and knowing that just because we play Major League Baseball in the United States doesn't mean that there's not hungry athletes everywhere else around the country or around the world who want somebody's spot. So it was nice to be able to see athletes with the same mindset, the same determination, and just attitude to get better. Of course, you have both ends of the spectrum, and you have some athletes that don't always work as hard as they should. In regards to the language, I definitely had to pick up some things. I know "vamonos" is "let's go" in Spanish, so "v feel" is "let's go" in German. So I had to get used to that a good bit. All in all, the whole experience. I mean, you dive in, submerge yourself in, and learning how to be a better coach, because you might have an athlete who is an auditory learner, a visual learner, or a kinesthetic learner. So I had to be able to get my utility belt of tools and be able to do as much as I can in order to help this athlete, especially if we don't speak the same language, or if they've never seen my movement patterns before. So it was nice to be able to really put it all out there, and I learned not to be afraid. Not that I am afraid, but if you're in a new group of people, you want to sometimes you might want to be, I don't know, broad-chested, fold your arms, and just act like you're, you know, hide behind the letters behind your name, or hide behind the letters in your chest, like the Marlins logo. I was very transparent, and it helped, and the players responded well, and they appreciated that.
No doubt, man. There's a lot of good stuff there. a lot of good ways that we could go here. First and foremost, communication is huge. And like you said, I mean, there's not many German-speaking guys necessarily playing in the States, but I think that still translates to working with guys that speak Spanish who might not know the English language. And there's some guys that are like, you know, you need to learn English or you're not going to make it. And then there's other guys that want to adjust to, okay, I'm going to try to help you no matter what. And sometimes it's putting your hands on them. Sometimes it's showing them. Sometimes it's getting a translator. But I think the biggest thing there, like you said, is just being able to find ways to get through to athletes. I'm assuming that's kind of helped you with the Spanish-speaking guys in your organization.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, so, and then second, in terms of just exercises, like I find myself all the time just, oh yeah, I used to do that exercise all the time with guys, and now I totally forgot, and let's start doing that. So Turkish get-ups would be one of those that... that is like a forgotten exercise, but it's tremendous. And like you said, there's guys that you get a 10-pound kettlebell in their hand and they're struggling with it. So that's cool to hear that they had some young kids doing it right there. Based on training age there, would you say that was a big difference between like your older group that you said you work with and the younger group? Different training ages led to different training philosophies and styles there? Or was the older group doing movement stuff too?
Yeah, you kind of took the words out of my head. I would say the training age for the Germans are significantly higher than their American counterparts, because there was a 15-year-old doing, I don't know, like 75 kilos on a Bulgarian split squat. I mean, that's heavy. That's real. I mean, that's how I was doing that. Right? That was impressive. And they're strong, but their training age or their time spent playing baseball is limited. That's the caveat there. They're strong, but their baseball skill is behind, because they might not start till 8 or 9 years old, where in the States they might play at 5 or 6. So there's a 3-year gap for some players, not for all. For some players, that's missing. And then with the older players, it's hard to see differences there, because they're older and they can either mask the mistakes that they have, or the mistakes or the training, baseball training that they haven't had isn't as obvious until you maybe get in gameplay. Everything that we were doing in Germany while I was there was all indoor, because it was between 22 and 27 degrees. It was the warmest it got was like 35 on a day. So everything was done inside. So the field was frozen, so we couldn't really get any infield in, so.
Okay. Let's transition a little bit just because I'm curious on this one. Did you get to do any sightseeing out there in Germany?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that was the icing on the cake because I didn't know where I was going. So the city of Regensburg is where I was based out of, and it's one of the oldest cities in Germany that wasn't affected by any bombing during World War II, or it was minimally affected. So there was a cathedral there that was built in the 1600s that looked like something out of like a Harry Potter movie. Everything was cobblestone. It was old. It was historic. To being that I'm from New Orleans, I consider New Orleans a city that it's lost in time. That the walls could talk to you if you really want to walk down the street, and that was right up my alley with being in Regensburg. Rich history, rooted in the Bayerisch or the Bavarian culture, because at one point Bavaria was a separate entity from Germany, and the train system that ran through Regensburg allowed me to be able to go to Munich 4 times, and I went to Nuremberg once. I went to the small city outside of Regensburg called Straubing once to visit some friends who I met who played German volleyball. That's a different story. But so it was all encompassing. I was really fortunate to be able to travel and see and work because the work schedule that I had was typically Monday through Friday, 3:30 till 3:30 p.m. till. The first couple weekends I was there, that we did have group sessions on a Saturday, but it still allowed me all day Sunday and half a day Monday. So as long as you're savvy, you can make something happen.
That's great, man. That sounds like an awesome time then. It's good to find a balance between work and life. So it's good that you were able to get out while you were there. All right, so next question. What do you believe makes a strength and conditioning coach successful? You've had some pretty good points that you brought up. What do you think makes a strength coach successful?
So one of them I think is empathy. So being empathetic and not sympathetic is pretty big on my point. It's something that I've been working on and something that I've noticed more and more and more throughout my tenure with the Marlins and then the internships that I had in college. Not saying that, like I said earlier, that I'm some omnipotent force because I've only been a strength and conditioning coach with the Marlins for 6 seasons. But the more and more I'm empathetic, the more I am willing to explain the why, and the more I'm willing to look at it from their lens and not just mine. It builds structure within the athletes that I've worked with that. It kind of transcends strength and conditioning as a kind of cheesy as it sounds. In my heart, I believe that strength and conditioning coaches are educators at the end of the day. We're educating them on movement quality. We're mo educating them on developing routine, on and then essentially that ends up translating to habit, to work ethic, to how you go about your day, and then planning out what you need to do pre-game to be successful post-game, which translates to life overall. Besides that, it sounds cliche, but being confident when you need to be, not arrogant, and being able to be humble at the same time as well. So when I was interning, it was a challenge for me to be forceful in my directiveness to an athlete because I didn't know who they were, or that was a big struggle of mine. But I realized that if I keep chipping away at this, if I'm humble, if I'm confident, but I'm not arrogant just because I have letters behind my name, you will be able to essentially be able to help your athlete or and help yourself grow into a role that they once didn't see themselves in and now that they're in. So those are the little points.
Couldn't agree more, man. Couldn't agree more. That's great stuff. Along those lines, advice for other coaches, be it young coaches, older coaches, whatever, just what kind of advice you got for other strength coaches in the field that will help them get to being successful?
Yeah, for young coaches, it's something that I've written down and I've thought about recently, just putting thoughts down. But for young coaches, one of the biggest things for me, and I mean this in all honesty, is don't be afraid to go outside of your norm, out of your social media, out of like who you're with now, and just cold call somebody and just essentially just show up on the doorstep, so to speak. I think something that blessed me a little bit was having a little ignorance, like blissful ignorance, where I didn't realize like that might be a taboo, to where I would just call somebody out of, and that worked for me perfectly, because in 2012 when I was interning, maybe that was that perfect time where people were trying to use Facebook too much, or LinkedIn or Twitter or some other medium. But I just would always suggest just call somebody. There's nothing better than just showing up or just showing your face, because there's so much more to a person than just something behind a phone or a resume randomly in someone's inbox. There's nothing unique about that. Anybody can do that. So that would be the first thing I would tell the young strength coaches or people who are aspiring to be in the position. And then second of all, read, educate yourself, find someone who you look up to, or involve yourself with something that's not involved with strength and conditioning, like mental training, perhaps. So that's something that I'm passionate about, and that's what I'm doing it for fun, like fun reading. But I'm trying to see how can I get my athletes as strong as I can. But if they're not mentally strong, if there's that moment in time where a sports psychologist isn't on the scene, what can I say to help trigger them in order to take their negative side of the sport or what's happening, and maybe trigger them to do something positive. So those are two biggies for me. Being able to put yourself in an uncomfortable position, meaning a young strength coach who has no contacts, and putting yourself out there and trying to see what happens. Because until you do something, nothing's going to happen. So for an older strength coach, is just continue to be humble and just try to do everything that you can in your power and not hide behind your letters. To get the blinders off your face and say, well, there's more outside of this. To ask why. Because until we ask why, for me, good enough is not an answer. If we're going to run shuttles on a day where a pitcher had a bullpen, for instance, and the pitcher asked me why, I'm not just going to say because. I'm going to go into detail and explain it to them, because one, it will buy-in for the program. It'll add buy-in to me as their strength and conditioning coach who has their best interest in mind. And it will just help them learn about who they are as an athlete and their body. And then one day, if they're a coach or if they're in the big leagues or it comes up in conversation, they'll have that answer. So I guess never settling, I guess, is that could be the basic term of it. But pushing the envelope, learning, trying to do as much as you can to pay it forward and not learn the world, but just chisel away at the profession itself.
That's great, man. The advice for younger guys, especially, that's kind of how the podcast came about in the first place, was just reached out to people and just kept bugging them, and hey, can we do this? Can we do this? Can we do this? And then finally it was like, all right, let's do this. And now it's, I mean, I think it'll be great for everybody. Along those lines, you said read. What continuing education resources do you recommend? Books to read, seminars to attend, maybe podcasts that you listen to. What do you got?
Yep. For seminars, it's pretty tough during baseball season, because everything that we do, we don't really have time off during the season, as you know. So last year I was in Jacksonville. There was a strength and conditioning, actually personal training, NSCA conference that I went to, which was nice to be able to put myself into a different realm of training and be able to take it from a personal training sort of point of view. But they had strength and conditioning professionals there who were eliciting certain I guess modalities, so to speak, or different training methods. So if there's anything close to someone that they can get credits for, that I always say that's beneficial, especially NSCA or ACSM or whatever certification they have. The USAW was awesome. It cost a couple bucks, but it was a good certification to get, and it didn't take long in order to put yourself in Olympic lifting. Even if your organization doesn't do Olympic lifting, it's nice just to put yourself under the bar and feel some weight on you. So that was something I did in 2013, but I've continued my CEUs on that, and I've really enjoyed it. And I will personally Olympic lift very lightweight every now and then, just to kind of get some movement going, because it kind of sparks a little testosterone in you. With that being said, I'm a huge advocate of TRX training. I've tried to do some certification every other year on that, just because I think it's a vital modality that we have and a vital tool that we have, especially being in the minor leagues where you don't have gyms always at your access. So you have to be creative with the movements or just know what to do with it. And it's a very versatile piece of equipment. So that's come in handy more than I can attest to in the past six seasons with the Marlins, being able to use the TRX with a weight vest or a medicine ball or something in that regard to get a workout in. For books, I read, for a real simple read, it was like Mind Gym. I don't remember the author, but Mind Gym was a good book to, I would think, for a young athlete, high school athlete or a young coach. It's real simple, real direct, but it was nice to be able to see the lines drawn and from athleticism and training. My all-time favorite book if there was one book that I would always tell people to buy is How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. That's probably my top of the list. I stumbled across that at Barnes & Noble, and I think I might have seen it prior to that on some type of, you know, book list or something like that, but that book has been pivotal in my transition from high A for a half season to GCL, where I was working with mainly young college or Dominican players, where the attitude is much more submissive because they're younger, and then going back to high A where I had an older team. I would be lying if I said I didn't use any of the ideas or skills in that book in order to get what I wanted from an athlete, but they think that they are getting their way as well. So it helped me bridge the gap between athletes and be able to compromise in an efficient manner. Besides that, I'm currently reading The Champion Mind by Jim Affenbrough. Pretty solid book. Awesome lines, one-liners, quotes in there. There's a couple players on my team right now that I'll like text them daily pictures of certain things, like every day. And we got in the bus last night, and one of the guys said, "Man, I haven't got a text from you in like a day and a half." I was like, "I know, man. I've been busy doing other stuff." So they really soak that up. They really enjoy, and that's just another thing solidifying the pay it forward, the empathy over just being sympathetic and being able to say, well, I'm reading this book, but I'm thinking of you. So it really ties in everything with them. That's the books that I really harp on. I might have had some other ones. Oh, for podcast, I try. It's like, how much time is there in a day? But I was listening to another strength and conditioning coach's blog or reading a blog, and he had a list of things to do with your time. So instead of like jamming out to music, which I love to do if I just need to, but if I have a 20-minute drive to work and a 20-minute drive back, that's 40 minutes of something I can do with it. So I'll listen to Joe Rogan or Tim Ferriss. Those are the two I usually listen to a lot, but I'm a huge nerd. So like Neil deGrasse Tyson has a podcast, and that's pretty funny. So I'll listen to that. Or sometimes I'll go to the the real far psychological side of things or philosophical side of things. And Sam Harris has a podcast, and he's got some, I mean, my brain hurts when I listen to his stuff, but it's good. So that's typically what I try to do, or the things that I try to do, but it ends up being that I'll read for, you know, a 5-day series, and at home I'll listen to podcasts because I don't read as much when I'm home just because of the schedule just being different.
Yeah, man, agree completely. The road is my reading time, and then I walk to the ballpark every day, so I'm actually listening to Coffee Break Spanish. So if you want to catch up on learning some Spanish, they got like 15-minute segments where they go over some Spanish stuff. So if that's something that you're interested in, Coffee Break Spanish is a good one.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that because that's something I try to do. Like I use Duolingo, and I'll try to do, you know, 3 or 4 lessons a day. But I'll write that down. Coffee Break Spanish. It's like an unwritten goal of mine to be fluent. Like last year, but that's not the case. But it's eating at me more and more and more that we have a couple Venezuelan pitchers on our team, and he makes me, and it was a thing that we came up with. But like every day, I need to come up with something, or we're just kind of creating this long conversation. So I pull out my notepad and my iPhone, and we just kind of write stuff down. So hopefully by the end of the season, I'll be able to, I don't know, do something.
Consistency is the key, man. My wife is fluent, so I have a huge advantage when I come home every day from the ballpark. It's like, all right, let's practice Spanish. Like,
yeah, just tell her she has to just talk Spanish.
Yeah, that's what we're working on now. So like we said, communication is key, man. So if you can connect with guys that speak the language, more power to us.
Yeah, it's at our fingertips. It's just, are we willing to invest the time into it? That's all.
Exactly. All right, you ready for the lightning round? I know you got in real early and you're probably a little tired, but if you got time, let's knock out the lightning round.
I'm juiced up. We're ready to go.
All right, awesome. All right, first question. Who's had the biggest impact on you as a strength and conditioning coach?
I would think the only way I would know this answer is being as far in my career as I am now. And I would go back to my high school where one of the role models I had was a man named Brother Chris Sweeney. He was a brother of Sacred Heart, kind of like a priest, but in a different order or different religious order. And he was my strength and conditioning coach, which I didn't even think that was a thing at the time, but he was probably the biggest influence on me. He was about 30 years old at the time when I was 13. He kind of took me under his wing. He had a really good relationship with my mother and father. And he was real humble. He worked hard, and he was strong as an ox. And I've kept in touch with him ever since high school. And I think he set the foundation of what strength and conditioning was. He let me know that it was something I was really good at, and he curated an environment that I didn't realize until I was older. But I kind of attribute it all to him.
Yeah, man, high school is kind of where it starts for everybody. So people are starting to see the value of strength coaches for high school kids, and I was right there with you, same thing. If you could pick only one piece of equipment to train with, what would it be?
With my recent infatuation, I'd say kettlebells because they're really versatile. I mean, you can do anything with them. So I'd say kettlebells. I've been doing all kinds of pre-warm-up stuff with them as of recent, so I'll go with that. They've, you know, like got cannonballs with a handle on it. You can't get much cooler than that. So.
All right, what's your greatest accomplishment, personally or professionally?
Oh, man, just one? No, I'm just kidding. my greatest accomplishment, personally or successfully?
Or professionally?
Wow. Personally is probably graduating from college and not being, you know, some, you know, just dude who dropped out. There's people that you know, close to my family. My parents were both educated, but I think it was important for them to see me graduate. So that was big for me, because when I was younger, I would just kind of do those nonchalant, always work for the family business or whatever. That didn't mean anything, you know. So it was nice to. I think that was probably the biggest thing for me. On the same lines of that, passing the CSCS, that was a huge, huge hurdle in my career. I struggled with it at first, and it was a really big moment in my life where I realized that I can do it if I really want to. Professionally, I think the MLB Europe program was probably the biggest accolade, but also the biggest challenge that I've had in as of recent. I mean, obviously, when I first got in with the Marlins and I had my first year, that was the biggest challenge, because that first season with the Marlins was everything's new, hang with them. And now, being that I went to Germany, I had to, you know, just figure it out, go there, work hard, don't be afraid, get involved, just jump right into a country, currency, language, culture that you don't even know. So I would say that's been the biggest thing professionally for me, to be able to, I mean, I consider it being a success that I was there. Everything that we did, I think, went really well. So I expect that out of myself. So I'm not shocked by that, but I'm also you know, happy that it went that way. But that's probably been the biggest thing so far.
All right, last one. Mm-hmm. If you were to pick any other profession other than strength and conditioning to have a career in, what would it be?
It would probably be some sort of, like, I don't know, entrepreneurship or startup. Like, I have this weird infatuation that if I could get a get rich quick thing on QVC, I'd totally do it. You know, if I could come up with, like, something, clearly I haven't, but if I could come up with something that's, like, sick, it's like, oh man, like, hey, I'll do, like, personal training on the side or strength conditioning on the side, but I'm gonna go on QVC like four nights a week and sell this thing that I came up with. So that would be cool to do that. But I like real estate. Real estate's cool. My mother's a real estate agent. So when I was a kid, I'd always be inside houses with her and selling, wheeling, dealing, renovating houses. My father was a contractor. So building homes is cool. But yeah, QVC, man.
The get rich quick guy. Love it. I love it. Oh man, it's been awesome. Where can the listeners get in touch with you? Are you on social media or what do you got? Where can listeners find out more about you?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram at Rob, R-O-B, Reich, R-E-I-C-H, 41. I post a lot of random stuff, just pictures. I've recently been posting pictures of the book and things of that nature that I think are interesting. On Twitter, it's my full name, Rob Reichert Jr., and that's probably the two best places to find me at. So if you're ever in New Orleans and you want some good food, come holler at me. I can show you some good stuff.
So yeah, I've been down to New Orleans once, and I definitely took advantage of the food out there. Absolutely. So all right, man, well, I appreciate you coming on. Like I said, I know it's early out there for you, and you didn't get much sleep, but you did a great job. Energy was way up. Loved it. And we'll be in touch soon.
Absolutely, yeah. I appreciate the time. I'm really glad we got to share 40 minutes and just talk shop. It's been a pleasure.
Oh yeah, man. We'll talk soon.
All right. Talk to you later. Bye bye.
Yep. All right, everybody. That concludes our episode with Rob. I hope you enjoyed it. Rob's a really good guy. Somebody that I just reached out to on a whim, and he was more than willing to share all his information with us, which is awesome. Three things I took from Rob. First, find balance with life and work. He talked about being in Germany, but he was still enjoying himself while doing his work. Second, he talked about reaching out. Don't be afraid to reach out to people. There's plenty of good coaches out there who are willing to talk shop any time of the day. And third, make the most out of your time. He talked about doing whatever you can to help your career, which will ultimately help you work with your athletes and get the most out of them. So those are the three things I took from Rob. Hopefully you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.